Okay, thanks. Thanks, Paul. One of the obligations of a visiting professor at the University of Hong Kong is to give a public lecture each year. And so it's very easy for me to give my course because I've given it many times and I just have to update it a little bit. On the other hand, it's always a challenge to figure out what would be an interesting topic that would draw an audience. I haven't always been successful at that. One year, I think there was an audience of three people for one of my talks, and I think you weren't even there. And so I decided that that was never going to happen again. So I was looking around for a topic that would be popular. Of course, it would have to involve a technological field like mine, but it itself should not be very technological. And it happened by a coincidence that I do expert witness work normally in the patent field. So if there are internet or electronic commerce patents and an expert is needed for testimony, lawyers somehow find me. And one of them also happens to be the lawyer for the Winklevoss twins, who are the guys who are engaged in litigation with Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook over the origins of the company. And so I used my connection with this attorney to gain an entree to the Winklevoss, and I'm going to refer to them. I'm not going to attempt to pluralize the word Winklevoss. So when I use it, it's either singular or plural, as context may determine. I use that connection to be able to talk to the Winklevoss and find out what was really going on in their head that has not actually come out in the lawsuit. And they knew that I was going to be giving this talk, and I cautioned them not to tell me anything that they wouldn't want the public ultimately to find out about. And so the more I got into the story and their mode of thinking, the more I thought that it's really a wonderful follow-on to the movie The Social Network, because we're going to pick up, well, I'm going to go through some of that, but we're going to pick up where that movie leaves off, which it doesn't really tell you what the outcome of litigation is. And in fact, it hasn't yet completed. It's still on appeal. But when you see what the issues are and the titanic financial numbers that are involved here, it's really a tale of Shakespearean proportion. And so I've titled it Face Wars because of the wars that Facebook is facing now and the wars that it is engaging in as an active attacker. And one of its victims is Google. And we'll see exactly what's going on, why Facebook is attacking Google and why Google appears to be losing. So here is the dramatis personae. The players in this drama are Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss. They tower over their partner, Divya Narendra. These guys are 6'5", and they were seniors at Harvard University when this all began. Divya is not 6'5", but he was also a senior at Harvard University. These are the guys who founded a company that ultimately became called ConnectU. You'll recognize Mark Zuckerberg here, the original and still CEO of Facebook. And down at the bottom are the famous Sergey Brin and Larry Page, the founders of Google. And the story tonight is all about interactions among these people, and we'll start with how Facebook got started. So I take you back to November 2003, not really that long ago. It's really only 7 years ago. The Winklevoss twins, 6'5" and handsome and rowing crew at Harvard, and Narendra were all seniors at Harvard University. They knew each other, and they were at the time building a social networking site at the time called HarvardConnections.com. And one of the reasons for that was that if you went to Harvard, there was no real way to find photos of people. You could go into their dormitory, and the dormitory would have photos posted, physical photographs posted on a bulletin board. But if you wanted to get the names of all the people who went to Harvard, and you wanted to get their email addresses and photographs of them, it just didn't exist. And certainly the technology existed to do it. And the Winklevoss twins and Narendra were building a website that was going to do that, called HarvardConnections.com. They had hired another Harvard undergraduate, Victor Gao. And at the time of the drama, they had paid him the whopping total of US $400 to implement the website. All numbers, by the way, all financial numbers in this talk are in U.S. dollars. $400, not very much money, and he didn't really like working hourly, and so he quit. When he quit, though, they asked him if he would brief his replacement. That is, go over the code that already existed, and the twins described what they had as a sophisticated code base that Gao was working on. And your replacement's going to come in. Please explain the code to him. Tell him what needs to be done to upgrade the site, etc. So the question was how to find a replacement. And how did Mark Zuckerberg, who was then a sophomore at Harvard and did not live in the same house with the Winklevoss, how did they even find him? And the way they found him was that he was already infamous at Harvard by November 2003 because he had created a website at Harvard called FaceMash.com. And FaceMash.com was rather hateful, but massively popular. What it did was it displayed pictures of pairs of Harvard students next to one another, and the user who viewed these photographs was asked to vote on which one was prettier or more attractive or sexier. Something we don't like talking about, but whenever you offer it to people, it's massively popular. And in order to obtain these pictures, which remember did not exist on the public web, in order to obtain the pictures, Zuckerberg had to hack into various servers at various Harvard dormitories in order to obtain the pictures. Now, hacking into dormitory servers was not particularly difficult because there are not stringent security measures that are taken by dormitories. We're not talking about nuclear secrets or something here. But nonetheless, he did have to obtain unauthorized access into these servers in order to get the pictures. Well, the site became wildly popular and went viral. And in 4 hours, over 22,000 votes were recorded on pairs of people. That actually was only due to the efforts of 450 different people. So what happened was, as soon as the site went up, people would get on their cell phone and they would instant message to their friends, oh, you got to see this. Type this URL in and just go for it. And so what happened was that the average voter voted for 48 pairs of faces in the first 4 hours. And so 22,000 votes were recorded. And one of the other features of FaceMash was that it was going to keep a winner's list. That is, who were the prettiest people ranked in order of prettiness based on this voting scheme. All right. This is a recreation. The original code for FaceMash no longer exists. It went away, whether it was destroyed or whether it was forgotten about, I don't know. But some time ago, Mark Zuckerberg eventually let the FaceMash.com domain go inactive, and it was purchased by somebody else for $30,000 US. And the guys who purchased FaceMash did what they could to recreate the original look of the Harvard FaceMash site. And in fact, this was actually used in the movie The Social Network, their recreation. But this is what you would get. You know, you'd see this woman on the right, this one on the left. And by mousing over one or the other, you would pick which one you thought was prettier. And as soon as you did that, you'd get another pair, and you could do it again, and you get another pair. Just kept on going through the entire library of faces that Zuckerberg was able to collect. This did not get a particularly good reception at Harvard. One thing was it was regarded as completely sexist. They didn't like the fact that he had to break into servers. They didn't like the fact that the people whose faces were appearing, they appeared involuntarily. They didn't have a chance to say yes or no, whether they wanted their face to be there. And Harvard regarded it as an invasion of personal privacy. And so as soon as the Harvard Crimson, which is the Harvard newspaper, found out about it, they published this article. This was on November 4th, 2003. This is right around the time when the Winklevoss twins are looking for a replacement programmer for Victor Gao. Harvard students often compete in the classroom, but for at least a few hours this weekend, only one thing helped them make the grade, their looks. Just a month after two Harvard alums competed in the Miss America pageant, a website created by Mark E. Zuckerberg 06 gave students a chance to rate their peers using ID photos taken from online house Facebooks. Okay. Well, Harvard didn't like this. And he was brought before a body called the Administrative Board. And he was charged with the following violations: that he had breached security, he violated copyrights, because after all, he was not the copyright owner of those photographs. And by making a copy, he became an infringer. And by publishing them, making them available publicly on the web, he also became an infringer. And furthermore, he violated individual privacy. So he was a bad guy. But it was clear that he knew how to build a wildly popular website. And he could do it in a very short amount of time. So possibly their first mistake, the Winklevoss twins, was in ignoring the way he had come to fame and hiring him instead for his evident ability, not for his ethics. Now, you're going to decide by the end of the talk whether that was an error or whether that was a massively brilliant thing that they did. Okay? But if we're going to ascribe some act of theirs as the cause of their troubles, I would say that the hiring of Mark Zuckerberg was the cause of their troubles. It may also be the cause of their riches, but it was certainly the cause of their troubles. On November 30th, about 3 weeks after the FaceMash site gains notoriety, the Winklevoss asked Mark Zuckerberg to become an equity partner in HarvardConnections.com. The site was eventually going to be called ConnectU because HarvardConnections.com is too Harvard-oriented. It clearly could not spread around the world if it were called HarvardConnections.com. And they sent Gao as their emissary to talk to him and offer him this equity share. And he was very excited about it. And there are sworn declarations by Gao as to exactly what the tenor of their conversations were in November of 2003. Zuckerberg liked the idea that he was going to be a partner as opposed to simply working for some kind of hourly fee.
Why didn't they offer it to Victor Gao?
I don't know. Gao wanted out. Mm-hmm. Right. And he agreed to finish the site. That is, Zuckerberg agreed to finish their site in return for a piece of the company. The totality of the interaction between the Winklevoss twins and Zuckerberg was this. They met physically in each other's presence 3 times. And if you saw the movie, you could understand that the Winklevoss twins were probably feeling very uncomfortable in his presence. He didn't wear the same kinds of clothes that they did. He didn't belong to the Harvard Club the way they did, etc. So I think that they probably avoided meeting with the guy. But there were 52 emails exchanged between the parties, and all those emails have been preserved. They sent him all of their code, the entire code base, the entire idea for HarvardConnections.com, and they had their guy, Victor Gao, brief Zuckerberg on not only what the code did, but what it was that the Winklevoss twins wanted. And this is from Gao's affidavit. At first, Zuckerberg was enthusiastic. "I read over all the stuff you sent, and it seems like it shouldn't take too long to implement. So we can talk about that after I get all the basic functionality up tomorrow night." So it's going to take him 1 day to get the basic functionality up. Then they can talk about, you know, adding features and whatnot. After 1 week, progress seemed to have halted. The email exchange changes tone completely. All of a sudden, Zuckerberg got incredibly busy. He had a computer science project to do. He had term papers to do. He really couldn't get to it. Sorry, but it's coming. In fact, for the next 2 months, he kept promising the code, but he never delivered any. That is, he never delivered a single line of code. Now, they hadn't paid him, of course, because he was going to be a sweat equity partner. So it's not like he took their money and ran. He just didn't do anything. As it turns out, he was actually developing his own site to be called thefacebook.com. On January 8th, 2004, which is barely a month after he was hired, MZ, which is my abbreviation here for Mark Zuckerberg, confirmed to the Winklevoss that he would deliver the finished code for ConnectU. Everything's fine. January 8th, I'm going to deliver your code. But on January 11th, 3 days later, he registered the domain, thefacebook.com, in his own name. January 14th, 3 days after that, was the last physical meeting between Mark Zuckerberg and the Winklevoss. And he didn't say anything. He just said that, you know, things had been delayed. He didn't inform them that he was building his own site and that he had registered the name thefacebook.com. In fact, they had no hint that there was anything wrong until they read the next article in the Harvard Crimson on February 9th, which they read about Mark Zuckerberg's new website, thefacebook.com. And they realized that they'd been had in some way. And so the relationship ended and the feud began. Let's take a look at the feud. Here's the this is the way the Winklevoss learned of his defalcation. Hundreds register for new Facebook website. FaceMash creator seeks new reputation with latest online project. You're going to decide whether the reputation's new or not, or whether it's just a repetition of the old one. When Mark E. Zuckerberg, 06, grew impatient with the creation of an official universal Harvard Facebook, he decided to take matters into his own hands. After about a week of coding, Zuckerberg launched thefacebook.com last Wednesday afternoon. Now, wait a second. After a week of coding, that means he easily could have done it within the first week after he was hired to do it by the Winklevoss twins. If he had time to do it for his own site, he couldn't have been that busy with the computer science projects and the term papers and all of that. Okay? Everybody's been talking a lot about a universal Facebook within Harvard, Zuckerberg said. I think it's kind of silly that it would take the university a couple years to get around to it. I can do it better than they can, and I can do it in a week. So there's his declaration that it really wasn't a complicated project at all. He could have done it fairly quickly. Well, the emails between the Winklevoss and Zuckerberg, of course, were preserved by the Winklevoss. What they never previously had access to, though, were the emails that he was sending to his friends and colleagues during this time and the instant messages that he was sending to his friends and colleagues. The Winklevoss didn't know about that. And this material was sought in the subsequent lawsuit, and they never produced it. And one of the reasons they never produced it, you'll see in a minute, about some of the content. But there were people involved who thought that Zuckerberg really didn't do a very honest thing. And so they disclosed to the Winklevoss twins what the content of some of these emails and instant messages was. And this is one of the best and one of the few that I can actually show in a public audience with mixed company. On December 7th, that is December 7th, 2003, 1 week after agreeing to work with Winklevoss, Zuckerberg sent his partner Eduardo Saverin, and he was a character in the movie also. Saverin was the guy who put up $15,000 in an account that Zuckerberg was going to be allowed to draw from to pay expenses of starting the website. I'm not going to talk about Saverin anymore, except to tell you that he had his own little beef with Zuckerberg. They settled out, and Saverin now owns stock in Facebook that is worth over $1 billion. So some people are calling that $15,000 investment the best investment that was ever made. Okay, because 7 years later, he turns $15,000 into $1 billion. But he's still not happy. He's still not happy with Zuckerberg. He thinks he should have half the company instead of his mere billion. Anyway, Zuckerberg sends his partner this message. They, and they refers to the Winklevoss twins. They made a mistake, ha-ha. They asked me to make it for them. So I'm like delaying it so it won't be ready until after the Facebook thing comes out. Okay? The other messages that he sent back and forth are really too obscene to be shown here. They're full of four-letter words beginning with F, for example. At the same time, in order to make sure that the Facebook that Zuckerberg was creating would be a real success, he hacked into the ConnectU site. That wasn't so difficult because he had all the code. He hacked into the ConnectU site to make it useless so that nobody would be tempted to actually use ConnectU in favor of Facebook. Okay? Now, naturally, the Winklevoss were not happy about this. And these are big, strong, strapping guys. And one of the things that I asked Tyler Winklevoss was, how is it that you and Zuckerberg were all living on the same campus and he is still living today? Why is it that you just didn't kill him? And the answer was a very calm answer that came back. Tyler said, we decided to take a different approach. So that suggested to me that they might have actually considered it, but they decided that it would be better to use the legal process. Well, there was a lawsuit eventually in Massachusetts. The legal history of this dispute is incredibly lengthy. It involved bringing suits in courts that decided they didn't have jurisdiction. It involved courts deciding that the venue was not proper, the case should really be heard by a different court. So the dispute arises in 2004, but it doesn't actually, the final court that agreed it had jurisdiction, they didn't find that for 3 years. So in July 2007, ConnectU sues Facebook and Zuckerberg. And they allege the following, that Zuckerberg intentionally hampered the development of ConnectU while working there. They didn't have that instant message that I showed you. They didn't have the proof. They had circumstantial evidence that he did it, but they didn't have the proof. That Facebook infringes ConnectU's copyrights, that they sent him the code, they sent him they gave him screenshots, etc., and he used those as a basis for the Facebook. And that Facebook misappropriated ConnectU's trade secrets. The trade secret was how to develop a popular social networking site that could spread beyond Harvard University. Okay? A hearing was held in this case in Massachusetts in 2007, and because they didn't have proof at the time, the judge was not impressed with ConnectU's case. He was ready to dismiss it, but he gave them additional time to collect more supporting evidence. Now, these parties are not happy with each other. ConnectU does not like Facebook, and Facebook does not like ConnectU. Now, there was another lawsuit filed, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But a mediation was ordered in the Massachusetts case in February 2008. So a mediation is a process whereby the judge says, please go in front of an independent third person. You tell the strength of your case. The other side tells the strength of its case. The mediator decides whose case is stronger and makes a recommendation to the parties that may assist them in actually resolving the matter short of full litigation. And so the mediation was held, and there were discussions about, yeah, of course, you know, we'll pay something to have this go away. When I say we, Facebook. Facebook would be willing to pay something to have this go away. And they actually start working out a term sheet, and the Mark Zuckerberg makes certain representations to the Winklevoss about what the value of Facebook stock was at that time. Now remember, this is now several years after the dispute started. Facebook had already had several rounds of financing. There was an established stock price, at least in the private market, about what the value of a share of Facebook stock was. Turns out they actually lied about it. And so there was a settlement term sheet drafted that the Winklevoss now claim was procured by fraud. That is, they simply lied. And the Winklevoss had no independent way of verifying the financial numbers that they were being given. They had to rely on Zuckerberg. Well, the court, when this term sheet was presented to the court, even though it wasn't signed by the parties, the court made the factual finding that the parties had actually arrived at a settlement, and the court ordered enforcement of the term sheet as their settlement agreement. Okay? Now, there's another lawsuit. Facebook versus ConnectU. What gripe would Facebook have against ConnectU? Well, as a way of diminishing the popularity of Facebook and enhancing its own popularity, ConnectU provided a software tool that enabled Facebook users to provide ConnectU with their login credentials. So I have a username and password on Facebook. If I give you my username and password, you can do everything that I could do, which means you could harvest all of the email addresses of all of my friends. And so what ConnectU wanted to do was to have everybody give them their Facebook login credentials. ConnectU would then log in as them and start harvesting email addresses and grabbing data from Facebook servers, so it could put all those people up on ConnectU. So it wouldn't appear that there was anything better about Facebook than there was about ConnectU. Well, this is not exactly legal. And in fact, the California Penal Code provides for an action against anyone who knowingly accesses and without permission takes, copies, or makes use of any data from a computer, computer system, or computer network. Well, part of the terms of use of the Facebook website is that it's for your personal use, and that if you give your login credentials to somebody else, that person does not become authorized to use Facebook. You are, but that person isn't. And so they probably violated the California Penal Code, and Facebook sued ConnectU in May of 2007 in California. Now, understand, the first case was filed in earlier in 2007. This case is filed later in 2007. So they're both pending at the time of this February 2008 mediation. So it was natural for the parties to try to dispose of both cases at the same time. So the settlement agreement was both cases are going to go away in return for whatever the compensation is that we're going to exchange. So here's what the settlement was. Covered both cases. The Winklevoss were going to receive $65 million in return for selling all their interest in ConnectU and dropping all claims against Facebook and Zuckerberg. $65 million, but it wasn't all going to be in cash. $20 million was going to be in cash. The remaining $45 million was going to be in stock of Facebook. Well, you're going to have to make a determination as to how many shares of Facebook would be represented by $45 million. So during the settlement, Facebook represented to the Winklevoss that they had just sold some shares to Microsoft for $35.90. Now, as it turns out, that representation was actually true. In a sense, it was objectively true, but subjectively false. That is, it was objectively true, but designed to create a mistaken impression in the audience. All right. So therefore, if you take $45 million and you divide by $35.90, that means the Winklevoss should get 1,253,000 shares of Facebook. And in fact, that's what the settlement was. They end up with $20 million plus 1.253 million shares. Doesn't sound so shabby for, you know, a couple of seniors at Harvard for an idea they worked on for a little while. Okay. After the settlement was finalized, the Winklevoss learned that Microsoft had received preferred stock. They hadn't received common stock. Whereas the Winklevoss got common stock. Okay? So this value of $35.90 does not apply to the stock that was given to the Winklevoss. In fact, at the same time that they were issuing this stock at $35.90 to the Winklevoss, internally within the company, they were telling their employees that it was worth $8.88 for Internal Revenue Service tax reporting purposes. Well, it's a factor of about four difference there. So the Winklevoss figured that they really should have received about 5 million shares, not 1.253 million shares. So at this point, both cases are settled already. They're dismissed. So they brought another action against Facebook and Zuckerberg to overturn the settlement on the grounds of fraud. Okay? It's a kind of an uphill battle. And this is one of the tools, one of the principal tools that they're using. It's U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission Rule 10b-5. The title of 10b-5 is Employment of Manipulative and Deceptive Practices. What you should know is that under U.S. law, rules properly promulgated by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission have the force of law. It means it's as if they were enacted by Congress. And in fact, this particular rule has actually been codified by Congress. So this is the law. It shall be unlawful for any person, and everybody admits, though reluctantly, that Zuckerberg is a person. It shall be unlawful for any person, directly or indirectly, by the use of any means or instrumentality of interstate commerce, or of the mails, or of any facility of any national securities exchange, to make any untrue statement of a material fact, or to omit to state a material fact necessary in order to make the statements made in light of the circumstances under which they were made not misleading in connection with the purchase or sale of any security. Okay, so it was true that they sold stock to Microsoft for $35.90. That was true. What they omitted to say was that it was preferred stock, and we're handing you common stock, which we're telling our employees is worth $8.88. So they believe that there is an obvious direct violation of Rule 10b-5, okay, among other things. Now, the first court to look at this, the federal district court, denied their claim on two bases. One is settlements are favored in the law. We like people to sit down at a table, agree on things, and dismiss lawsuits so we don't waste the time of courts, judges, and juries. And you have a huge mountain that you have to climb in order to overturn a settlement. I happen to believe that they have the horsepower to climb over that mountain on this one. Okay? But the judge made the extraordinary finding that statements made about securities in a settlement negotiation are not subject to Rule 10b-5. I have no idea where he got that. There's no case that's ever held that. Okay? Clearly, it was an inducement to them to enter into the settlement agreement. Okay? The case is now on appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in California. Oral argument on this matter was heard on January 11th, 2011, so last month. But there's no decision yet. But it almost doesn't matter what the decision is, because whatever happens, there's going to be an appeal to the Supreme Court. It's not clear that the Supreme Court will take the case, although the amount of money that's involved here is so large that it's possible that the Supreme Court will actually act on it. Now, let's see about crying for the Winklevoss twins. In October 2010, Facebook stock split 5-for-1 because they wanted to lower the investor price. That means the Winklevoss now have 6,265,000 shares instead of their original 1.2 million. On February 18th, last week, some Facebook shares changed hands privately at $37 a share. That gave Facebook a putative valuation of $83 billion. The 50 was based on the Goldman Sachs investment. It's now up to 83. So the Winklevoss now hold a total of $250 million worth of stuff. They have $20 million in cash, and they have $232 million worth of stock. However, if they had gotten what they think they should have gotten, which is the valuation of $8.88, they would actually have $945 million because they'd have the $20 million in cash, but they'd have four times as much stock, which would be worth $925 million if the stock had been valued properly during those settlement negotiations. All right. So what's happening is, even though Zuckerberg completely screwed these guys, he's now making them richer by the day, because as Facebook increases in value, they're getting richer and richer and richer. And so why is it that they want to disturb the settlement? Why don't they just say, you know what, we've had a good laugh over this, let's just go home? And what people don't seem to understand is the public thinks that they're trying to get $945 million instead of $252 million, that they're asking the court to replace that $35.90 valuation with an $8.88 valuation. No, that is not what they're asking. The outcome they want is a total voiding of the settlement. All of the cash and all of the stock has remained in escrow accounts ever since the litigation. Okay? So it's available to be given back. What they're saying is, if we win and the court overturns the settlement, we give back all the cash, we give back all the stock, we have zero, except we then have the ability to proceed with the original lawsuit. And we'll take our chances in front of a jury. Because when the jury reads that email about, ha ha, their mistake was in hiring me, all I'm doing is delaying this until I can get my site, they believe they will eventually get more than what they were originally offered. Now, they're not asking the court for more. They're asking the court for zero. Zuckerberg, on the other hand, he could easily have said, you know what? If you think your chances are so good in front of a jury, go ahead. Give us back everything and take a shot at it. But he doesn't want that either, because he's concerned that when the real facts come out in front of a jury, it might be much worse than $945 million. Okay? Well, you know, think about it. What would you do? I guess it depends on your utility for money. A lot of people I know, in fact, everybody I know except the Winklevoss twins would take the $945 million. But, you know, some people are like that. All right.
My question.
Yes.
If the Winklevoss twins bring this case up,
yes,
wouldn't it stop Facebook from becoming a listed company? Because there's still lawsuits? And would they actually... What I couldn't understand is, with all these unsettled issues, why do people still pay that much money for it?
Okay, so it's a common thing. When you know that a company wants to go public, you sue them because you believe you will get much more leverage in a settlement negotiation. Because the belief is that the underwriters will not take them public while this dispute is roiling. All right. Now, there are lots of law firms, sometimes called Wall Street law firms, who are very adept at writing legal opinions that will tell the public that there is no significant risk. For example, enough stock has been escrowed in the opinion of counsel to handle any settlement that's required. Enough cash has been escrowed. The operating condition of the company will not be affected. All that's going to happen will be a change of ownership of stock. Zuckerberg may have to give up the stock, but you, if you were an investor in the company, you're not going to have to give up the stock. So there are ways of papering it so that they could certainly go public. But if you read Zuckerberg's statements, he doesn't want to go public anytime soon. He's enjoying the uptick on the stock.
Yeah, whenever you like money, you just sell a little bit of the stock.
Can do that. Yes.
So your second point about seems greedy.
Yeah.
But what you just say at the end of this slide was that if they were to get what they wanted,
yes,
they're going to take this case from scratch again.
Yes. And they might get nothing.
They might get nothing, but they may get more, as you say.
Yes, they might.
But isn't that the goal? I mean, I know there's this maybe this intention of just getting justice back or whatever, but if they were to win, assuming that this turns their way and then they start the lawsuit starting from scratch, and then they get awarded 50% of the company.
Oh, if they got awarded 50% of the company, that would be a tremendous win. But if they get awarded 0% of the company, what are they going to do? It's a gamble. It's a huge gamble. And the question is, at some point, numbers like this make people reluctant to take further gamble. Okay? Now, I hand you $252 million, and you're very happy, but I tell you, the next thing you have to do is you have to bet it on red and roulette. And you might end up with double, or you might end up with zero. I think most of the people in the room would rather take it home instead of the chance of doubling it. No, no, they didn't win. They didn't win. The court ordered a mediation. No, the court ordered a mediation, and they settled during the mediation. There was no determination as to whether they were right or wrong. The judge, it's true, was not impressed. But just because a judge isn't impressed doesn't mean a jury might not be impressed at some other time. All right, let's look at more wars, though. First of all, the financing of Facebook might be of interest to residents of Hong Kong. In June 2004, the first serious investor showed up. That was Peter Thiel, who was one of the founders of PayPal. He was fabulously wealthy by then. He invested $500,000 for 7% of the company. I'm not sure he still has 7%. I don't know what the dilution was, but that's worth almost $10 billion today. In 2005, venture partners came in. Accel Partners and Greylock Partners put in a total of about $40 million. Then in October 2007, this is the Microsoft transaction. Microsoft put in $240 million, but they got preferred stock, which gives them liquidation preference over everybody else. Then Li Ka-shing, soon after that, I guess he believed that Microsoft was onto a good thing, He put in $60 million, and a few months later he decided it wasn't enough, and so he put in another $60 million after that. His investment is up to 50% of what Microsoft's investment was. Only in 2009 did Facebook experience its first positive cash flow. It had been losing money up until that time. But then in January 2011, Goldman Sachs put in $450 million, giving a valuation of $50 billion, and they committed to raise $1.5 billion more from their investors. Now, you know, maybe, that there was some difficulty with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. This is not a public company. And the law says that after you have a certain number of shareholders, you must become a public company, or it's illegal for you to sell any further shares. And so there's such a hot aftermarket now in Facebook shares. The number of shareholders is proliferating. And so Goldman Sachs has made the decision that they will not offer any of this security to any U.S. citizens.
I thought they went into an auction, right?
Hmm? Who?
They went into an auction.
When you say they?
Well, Facebook.
Oh, yes. Well, not exactly an auction. They went into a competition as to which of the various investment banks they were going to allow to make an investment in them. And they took a look at Morgan Stanley, for example, and they took a look at Goldman Sachs, and they decided on Goldman. But Goldman has made the announcement Americans cannot buy Facebook, because otherwise Facebook would have to actually go public too soon. So it's all the foreigners that are going to have the benefit of this. All right. The growth of Facebook has been completely astounding. So this chart shows you the number of Facebook users in millions, so 100 million, 200 million, 300 million, etc. The date on which that number was achieved, and how long it took from the previous date to get to the next 100 million. So from start of the company to 100 million users was 1,665 days. But to go from 100 to 200 was only 225 days. And then 150 days, 143 days, 166, 168. And this shows you the monthly growth rate. Well, they, of course, can't keep sustaining that because very soon the whole earth will be saturated with Facebook users. But nonetheless, any company that can grow anything still by 3.5% per month is completely astounding. So it's clear that during this year they're going to go over 700 million users, which is a tenth of the world's population, and a much higher percentage of all those people who have access to computers and computer networks. This is the way it physically looks. That's the growth of Facebook from its start back here all the way to right around now, where they have over 600 million users. Now, how are they doing against Google? And here's the problem. Google is totally wonderful. Google has probably changed the life of everybody in this room. I know it changed my life. It's become an essential tool of being a human being. You want to find out some information, you type something into a little box in Google, and magic happens and it comes out. And, of course, the founders of Google have made a fortune. The problem is, when was the last great thing that Google came out with that excited you? Maps is pretty good. I use Google patents a lot, but I've probably not more than tens of thousands of people use that. The problem is that Google has become non-exciting. It's become part of infrastructure. And so what's happened is that if you look at the growth rate of unique visitors to Facebook, so this is unique visitors per month, for example, the projection is that the number of unique visitors to Facebook is going to exceed the number of unique visitors to Google sometime in 2013. Now, what does that mean? Doesn't everybody use Google? No. All intelligent people use Google. But there are lots of teenagers that aren't really intelligent. And all they're interested in doing is staying in touch with their friends. And the way they stay in touch with their friends is on Facebook. You can't keep in touch with your friends on Google. So there seems to be a powerful social networking phenomenon that is leading to this incredible rise in the number of unique visitors. Now, let's look at something that's much more serious from the financial viewpoint. This is the United States share of display ad impressions for top publishers. And these are digital display advertising. We're not talking about print media. Okay? Now, This is by quarter, from the first quarter of 2009 to the third quarter of 2010. So this is not projections. This is real data. Consider the light blue line, Facebook.com. Facebook.com now has 25% of all digital display ad impressions that are published in the United States. 25%. What has happened to Google sites? Oh, Google's been slowly increasing its share a little bit. The reason that it's been able to increase its share is that Fox is going way, way, way down. Fox Empire has fallen apart, at least digitally. And so Google seems to be picking up a tiny bit of the loss in Fox, but Facebook is picking up even more. And this is what creates money. I mean, this is where the revenue comes from, is from advertising. You don't pay a fee to be a Facebook user. You pay a fee to be a Facebook advertiser. And so this is what the smart finance guys are looking at. Number of individual unique users, that's interesting. But it's only interesting if you can sell them something, or if you can sell somebody else the right to approach them or advertise to them. All right, let's keep going. Let's look at Facebook's revenue. I actually found this chart astounding. It's not that their revenue is so great. Their revenue ends up being about one-tenth of Google's revenue. However, what I'm amazed by is the proportion of their revenue that's coming from non-U.S. sources. So U.S. is in red, and non-U.S. is in black. And the projection is that in 2012, next year, they'll actually be equal to one another. Well, you know, that sort of makes sense, because there are a lot more people not in the United States than there are in the United States. But nonetheless, the fact that they're able to get advertising revenue from non-U.S. sources is pretty amazing. All right. This is another measure, and this is what's really scaring Google. And that has to do with the time spent on the website. What this shows is the solid black line is Facebook.com, and this is from the third quarter of 2006 to the third quarter of 2010. So it's real data, no projections. This is the percentage of time that people spend on each of these sites. Right now, if you take all users in the United States and look at what they're doing each minute, 10% of their time is now spent on Facebook. Okay? If you look at Google sites is this line. It has remained essentially constant at a little below 8% for the past 4 years.
That's Microsoft.
I'm sorry. Where are we? That's Microsoft. Where's Google? Google's the dot on this one. Yeah. It's gone up. I'm sorry. You're right. It's gone up. But they're equal now. And the rate of rise of this is faster. Why is this? You don't use Google very long. You go to it, you type a search, you look at the search results, and you're done. When you use Facebook, you're looking at this person, you're messaging to them, you're going to their friends, you're writing on their wall, you're making copies of the photos, etc. All the time that you're doing this, display advertising is being presented to you. Whereas on Google, even though there is advertising, if you're only on for a short time, the total amount of ad that you see is much smaller than the ad that you're going to see on Facebook. And so Google's worried. I'll prove it to you. I'm not just making this up. I have proof. Okay? Okay, here's a chart. Now I'm going to tell you in advance there's a little bit of lying going on here. This is a chart of the growth of the market capitalization, the value of Google versus the value of Facebook. It is not true that Facebook is worth more than Google. But in order for me to show you both growths, I had to change the scale of this one to match the size of this one. So the blue numbers are the Google values. The red numbers, which are smaller by a factor of a third, okay, are the Facebook numbers. So it's not interesting where they cross, because that's a meaningless time. What you should be looking at is the shape of the curve and the shape of Google. Google is not even right now at its highest valuation that it's ever been. Its highest valuation was back here in late 2007 before the economic crisis. Okay, so Google's kind of going up, but it's not clear how high it's going to go. I mean, it's pretty high right now at around, it was $202 billion the last time I looked. The problem is Facebook, with one-tenth the revenue, is already at $83 billion. So this is a problem. Now, why is it a problem for Google? You know, aren't Page and Brin wealthy enough? Here's why it's a problem. The hiring battle. When Google hired people, it gave them stock. As long as that stock was appreciating in value, they were happy to keep contributing to Google. When the stock starts to taper off and isn't increasing in value anymore, and they just have their salary to look to, it's not so exciting. On the other hand, across the street in Silicon Valley is this Facebook company that's offering stock options, and that stock is zooming through the roof. So what do I need to stay with Google for? So what happens is, in October 2010, Lars Rasmussen, who was the power behind Google Maps, he left. You may not have heard of Omar Hamouy. Okay? He owned a company called AdMob. 5 months earlier, he had sold AdMob to Google for $750 million. He stays with Google for 5 months before deciding that Facebook is a much more exciting opportunity. So he takes his Google stock, his $750 million in Google stock, and he jumps over and works for Facebook. These were reported by TechCrunch magazine. Now, this story I found quite amazing because a few weeks after their departures, Google offers staff engineer $3.5 million to turn down Facebook offer. Okay? Basically, what happened was, prior to this, they found, this investigative reporter found a case where an engineer was making about $150,000, turned down 15% raise plus $500,000 in restricted stock, and left for Facebook anyway. Okay, so Google tried to keep him. They said, here's $500,000. Yeah, it's restricted because they don't want him to leave tomorrow. It's going to vest over a period of time. All right? So he left anyway. Then they realized that this kind of offer, 15% raise and $500,000, is just not going to cut it. So when their staff engineer says he's leaving, they say, whoa, wait a second. How does $3.5 million sound? And what do you think the guy did? No. He took the money. He took the restricted stock.
He must be old.
Possibly because maybe he wasn't able to get enough stock from Facebook. Okay. So why is Google having trouble? Facebook is still a ground floor opportunity, even though it's been around for a few years. It's still much smaller than Google. It has only 1/12 of the number of employees that Google does. And so there's more chance to shine. If you join Facebook and you're a star, you're going to shine 12 times as brightly as you would at Google. 1 in 5 Facebook employees actually came from Google. So when you join, it's old home week. You're with your old pals. Okay? Facebook stock is appreciating fast. Google is quite stable, actually, as a stock. Facebook is perceived now as the hottest employer in the technology field. There's nothing more exciting if you're a tech guy than working for Facebook, such is the perception. Facebook captures more eye minutes per month than any site. So if you have a role in contributing to something that is visible on the Facebook site, more people are going to see it for a longer period of time than anything else you could do on Earth. Okay? Facebook has room to grow with new applications, messaging, payments, Google Groups, new games, Farmville, etc. Google can't do that. You don't play games on Google. Google is a serious search site. So Google's opportunity to throw stuff at you to retain your eyeball is limited by their own business model. Facebook has essentially no limitation on its business model. They just want more of it. They just want more business. Google is essential, but it's non-social. You never get on Google to interact with other people. You get on Google to find out stuff. And people, because of the nature of humans apparently, want to interact with other people. Okay, what should the Winklevoss do? This is a photograph, actually, taken from the Beijing Olympics in 2008, where they competed, and they actually finished sixth in the two-man skull. All right. What should they do?